When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Hello, I'm John Edge, and this is Skylines, the City Metric podcast. It's local elections pretty soon. We're within a month now, so obviously I'm sure the local election lights will be going up soon. Everyone will be getting the local election trees out. And we'll be leaving a carrot and a mince pie and a glass of sherry out to see if John Curtis is to come around.
Only be a third of a mince pie in many places.
Okay, well, you kind of spoilt my little introduction there. But yeah, Stephen Bloody Bush is with me again. He's going to tell me what's interesting about these local elections and what we should be paying attention to. So Stephen Bush, what's good in the world of local elections at the moment?
Well, so the first thing to note is, in terms of my annoying heckling there, is that a lot of the majority of the seat of the councils which are up are electing via the so-called thirds model, which is where
What could that possibly mean?
Is where you elect a third of the seats. You have elections every year, well, 3 years out of every four, and then you have an off year. Now,
this is the only possible answer to the question, why is Birmingham City Council like the US Senate?
I mean, Birmingham is all up this year because they've got
they changed the system, but it was the only one I could think. Also, the Senate is every 2 years. It really doesn't work as a joke, if I'm honest.
It was pretty bad. The problem, I mean, there are lots of problems, I think, with the third system. Best illustrated in terms of, I'm going to basically talk us through, hopefully, all of the cities I see as interesting and ones to watch in the coming local elections. Oxford sums up what is wrong with the thirds system. Labour could lose the council elections on the day. I mean, they won't, but let's just run with it for a second. They could lose all of the seats that were up than they were defending, right? It could be the clear and obvious will of the people of Oxford not to be run by the Labour Party. But Labour would still run the council because their majority is big enough at the moment that they could lose all of the seats they are currently defending, and they would still be able to form... I think they would be in no overall control, but they would still be the only plausible combination to form the local council. And
this was always Tony Benn's defence of first past the post, wasn't it? It's about the ability to throw a government out rather than... which is talking about PR as opposed to...
Well, Tony Benn, I think, was certainly right at the time, although I wouldn't have agreed with him about electoral reform anyway for other reasons. But one of the kind of interesting questions is whether or not first past the post is still achieving that function very well now. But when you have the thirds model, you basically fundamentally break the crucial advantage, such as it is, for first past the post.
So as we mentioned, Birmingham has moved away from that, hasn't it? Are there other councils that have done that, or was that a Birmingham-specific innovation?
I think it's a Birmingham-specific... I realise I don't know if they're... Are they not all up because they've got new boundaries, as with Manchester, where, again, they're all up, but that's because they've got new boundaries?
That might be a reason. I just remember I was up in Birmingham a couple of years ago and they were talking about having an election for a third of the councillors. So I was struck by the fact they're now all up.
So Birmingham had 120 council seats because, obviously, as you'll know, it is a comically huge local authority.
It's over a million people. It's the largest in Britain, I think.
And so, but they are going to have slightly fewer councils. They're going to have 99. So you have this weird situation where it's actually quite plausible that Labour could lose, in inverted commas, councillors, but have a much stronger parliamentary position. Manchester has also got boundary changes and is all up as a result. Now, the striking thing I think to watch in all of kind of the great cities of England and the London boroughs are two things. One, do the Conservatives just get absolutely blown away? That was very much the pattern in the general election in 2017, was the cities becoming increasingly hospitable territory for parties of the left and centre and increasingly hostile to parties of the right. Now, the fun thing about the 2017 general election is that not only do we not know how unusual it was, we probably won't know how unusual it was for, you know, several more elections. Probably by 2027 we'll be able to go, like, we'll be able to have some interim conclusions about the weirdness of the 2017 election or not.
And one way in which the 2017 general election was weird, I think I'm right in saying, was that there is this pattern you've written about many times, that generally speaking, local election results are sort of a flaw for the governing party. This is as bad as they're going to do, because if this is the public giving them a kicking, so they're probably going to do better than that when you come to the general election. And I think I'm right in saying that last year's locals and then general totally blew that pattern out of the water.
Yes.
Right?
At no other election since the 74 reorganisation, which is the furthest back you have meaningful result, the governing party has always outperformed its local election performance, and the opposition party always underperforms its local performance. Which, I mean, if you think about it, makes sense. Now, there are one of the other interesting known unknowns is there are two sort of, at this point, perfectly viable theses. Thesis one is that local elections have ceased to be predictive because the way that the Labour coalition has changed means that you have a larger number of voters, young graduates, people who move around a lot, who are going to vote in local elections. So as with the US midterms becoming quite, being harder for the Democrats to win than the Republicans, all other things being equal, even before you throw in American-specific issues like gerrymandering, that will similarly start to be an issue in the United Kingdom, right? That is theory one.
Sorry, can I just check you didn't misspeak, that you said harder for the Democrats to win? Is that...
Yeah, so the midterm elections in the US are harder for the Democrats to win,
really?
In general.
Yes, because I'd have thought that the Democrats coalition would be those kind of, you know, young graduates again. Is that not... Does that not stack up as a comparison?
They are young graduates, but they... Similarly, the problem with young graduates is they don't vote.
Ah, okay, right.
And when they do, they are maddeningly clustered together, which is not helpful under first past the post. So theory one, if theory one is true, I expect we will see it fairly quickly in these local elections, which is basically that Labour will continue to underperform in local elections rather than overperform as we would expect. Theory two, which I think is more likely, is that actually the local elections in 2017 were predictive for where the two parties were in May of 2017, and it is a measure of the impressive turnaround that Labour managed and the unimpressive.
It's also
turnabout.
A turnaround in its way, isn't yeah. it? It's just a turnaround in the other direction.
Yeah, the turnaround that Theresa May managed also in June. And again, we will start to see if that is the case in these local elections. Now, there are kind of two sort of parallel things to watch in terms of the Labour-Tory battle. The first is whether or not Labour can start to do better in the types of seats that prevented it forming some form of government last time. So the first are kind of classic suburban areas. Now, there are some exceptions like Leeds North West, which now look like very, very safe Labour territory, and we would expect Labour to gain more seats in Leeds. But yeah, I mean, that was either a 92 or a 1997 gain, used to be a traditional marginal. Very much, you know, Sefton in Merseyside is another interesting example of places where, you know, Labour went into the 2010 election very worried it was going to lose Sefton. They were very worried in 2015 they wouldn't hold it, and now, again, it's somewhere where they kind of win by a Soviet margin.
Birmingham Edgbaston's another of these, isn't it, where it's like used to be a sort of key marginal, but it's just like solid Labour territory now.
Yeah, so the interesting question, right, is, as it happens, all of those places have got council elections up. Now, if we start to see kind of similar kind of just smashing of the opposition parties, so the opposition to Labour, as it were, in those constituencies, that, I think, suggests that 2017 is a more permanent realignment of the party's coalitions and not a product of many of the things we know were odd about 2017, right? It was a snap election, voters tend to behave oddly in those. It was after a referendum, voters tend to behave oddly after those. Neither of the two leaders were that well known by the public at large. I know it's one of those things which does make you kind of, at least it makes my mind go, but actually most people did not have a very strong opinion of who Theresa May or Jeremy Corbyn were like. They had very vague impressions of both of them. So those are the reasons why 2017 might be weird. However, there are long-running structural reasons why 2017 election might be not weird, and we will start to see that in those places. The other interesting thing to watch are your Tamworths, Plymouths, Swindons. What all of those places have in common is they are all places where Labour almost but not quite or only partially broke through. And if they had wholly broken through, they would have been able to form, you know, a minority government, albeit quite a weak one. Now, the Tory source for hope is that the reason why Labour does worse in a lot of suburbs and exurbs, like Morley and Outwood, Ed Ball's old seat, which they have yet to win back, is because fundamentally there is a different type of voter in those areas who, for cultural or political reasons, just will not vote for Labour under Jeremy Corbyn. And that no matter how bad things get, those seats are the Conservative pressure valve. They're this blue firewall which the Labour Party in its current incarnation cannot get past.
So let's break this down a bit. What does you've written blogs under these very titles, so just give us the headlines of these, but what does a good night for the Tories look like?
A good night for the Tories is one where they lose lots of seats because they're the government, but where they maintain a token presence in the places they hold. So in Hastings, for example, it is plausible, I think they're in single digits already. They are defending something like 6 of the 9 council seats they hold. So obviously a disaster would be for them to lose all 6. If they lost 3, then they've still got a token presence because councillors are so important to running your activist base, particularly if you're the Conservative Party where your activist base is in any case shrinking. And for Labour to underperform its vote share in places like Hillingdon, Tamworth, Swindon, because that would indicate that this idea that there is a line, you can draw a line between types of constituencies and Labour just cannot do well in the second type. That would give some credence to what at the moment is basically just a Tory hope, like me believing that maybe if I, you know, look at myself very hard in the mirror, I'll start to lose weight.
That one doesn't work. I've been trying that. What's a good night for Labour?
Well, in some ways, it would be the opposite, right? They would win the local elections in terms of what was up in Swindon, Tamworth, Plymouth. I mean, actually, one of the things that the Conservative Party has done well is setting the expectations for this local election, right? If Labour win Wandsworth and Westminster, that raises existential questions about the Conservative Party's ability to win good majorities in Parliament.
So this is the thing where there's been a lot of talk about how the Tories could basically be wiped out in not even just inner London, but it's kind of like, except for the sort of furthest eastern suburbs, it's basically all of London, right?
Well, in the bits of London in which people believe themselves to live in London.
So like the sort of very eastern, like Havering, Bexley, Bromley, those are all technically London boroughs, but the people in them would generally consider themselves to be living in Essex or Kent, so there's a big cultural difference there. They're very white areas as well, related to that. But like basically, everywhere west of those three boroughs, the Tories could be in serious trouble, right?
Yeah, and so the Tories have done a very good job of setting expectations. So a lot of people, I mean, take, say, Westminster, right? The boundaries there are incredibly unfavourable to Labour. The population distribution is very uneven. It has never been Labour-held in its history. It would, by any stretch of the imagination, be a remarkable night for Labour if they won it. It is a testament to the Conservative spin operation that they have somehow managed to downgrade that to about par, and a testament to some of the failings of Labour's spin operation that they have managed to downgrade that to about par. However, people should ignore that and focus on the fact that at that point, right, you are sort of going, okay, so has the Conservative Party in its modern incarnation decided it will always be the second party in London, will have no representation in Manchester, no representation in Liverpool, no representation in Oxford, no representation in Bath, no representation in Bristol? Because if that is true, and there are many reasons to suppose it is,
there aren't enough seats left.
Yeah, there aren't enough seats left not to... Because this thing, people forget because of how badly she ran the snap election, that her calculation in calling it was 100% correct. They could not govern effectively with a majority of that size. And if all of those cities are going, yeah, we don't want any Tories here, okay, thanks, well then the best case scenario for the Tory party is a small, not particularly effective majority of the kind it got last time. So yeah, good for Labour would be showing that they can win beyond the places they did very well in June. and it would be great if they could then add a Wandsworth or a Westminster to that list. But actually, I would say that... So weirdly, I think what will probably happen is that I reckon Labour will win Wandsworth and Westminster. And everyone
really?
Will...
Westminster?
Yeah. There are 20,000 EU citizens in Westminster.
Oh, of course, they get votes in the locals.
Yeah, and the thing I really noticed... So
one of our colleagues has a very close family member standing for the Labour Party in Westminster as well.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, Jasper's mum is standing.
Oh.
I should really know her name, but I can't remember it, even though I have in fact met her. But yes, she's so you know, as if you didn't know, the New Statesman is very much coming down on the Labour side of this one.
So, one of the things I always try and do when I visit a council election is I do some door knocking on my own, just because I think it's the most effective way to get at least a sense of what the parties are going to be experiencing. And the thing I was really struck by is that while people who have EU citizenship are not thrilled, to put it mildly, with some aspects of Labour's Brexit position, they understand that where they live, the way they can hurt the Conservative government, which they really want to do. I mean, in some cases, people really want to slam the door before they leave, as it were. They know then that is the lever to pull. I think Barnet is actually probably the most difficult of the three boroughs.
That surprises me, because I would have guessed it was the easiest, because it does have sort of quite Labour areas in the south, although they are also quite Jewish areas. Is that a factor here?
Well, this is the thing, is that so Barnet is on paper the easiest, right? They only have to gain two. Is also, yeah, they have, you know, solid Labour areas where you would expect them to win basically no matter what. They have a better base as well. But the ongoing problems in the Labour Party with anti-Semitism are continuing to... I mean, really, those are the only places it matters. I mean, one of the things that I find kind of depressingly laughable about this idea that this row has solely been manufactured to hurt Labour in the local elections is, I mean, anyone who looks at the history of Gentile voting behaviour in the United Kingdom, and indeed anywhere else in the world, waiting for Gentiles to vote in the interests and worries of Jewish people is going to wait a hell of a long time. So other than Barnet and also the Prestwich wards of Bury, which I realise I don't know if they're even up under the thirds model there, are really the only places you would expect Labour to struggle as a result of that.
Ilford North's got a big Jewish population, but did actually return West Streeting with an increased majority.
Well, this thing is
supportive of the community.
Actually, in 2017, Labour did astonishingly well in majority Jewish wards. You know, Diane Abbott won every ward in Stoke Newington, including this bit of Stamford Hill where the Orthodox community is. Fabian Hamilton won every ward. Ivan Lewis increased his majority. West Streeting now has a comically large majority. Now, part of the truth is ultimately, like, because it is a small community that has historically been vulnerable, it is a very politically aware and engaged community. I mean, to give you an idea of that, last time I went to visit my great aunt, one of the people there asked, when I found out that I covered politics, asked if I knew Sarah Sackman, then the very impressive candidate in Finchley and Golders Green. So I feel that your odds of a good candidate bailing you out with your National Party problems are probably higher with the Jewish community than any other, but nonetheless, they are having to do an awful lot of bailing out. So I think Barnet is probably a bridge too far for them, even though it is so easy on paper. But yeah, that would be a good night for Labour, would be to do that. For the Lib Dems...
Okay, I was going to ask, we should complete the set. There are some Lib Dems who listen to this podcast, and they're nice people. You know, they're adorable. What are they hoping for?
So the Lib Dems, I think, are in many ways the most interesting one, because one of the things that Tim Farron, in my view, rightly identified was that the coalition meant that the type of person who the Lib Dems are targeting has forever changed. They cannot go back to being that kind of, like, conscience of the Labour Party, not least because the conscience of the Labour Party now seems to be running the Labour Party, going, oh, isn't it beastly that the Labour Party hasn't done enough for unicorn orphans? Because after the coalition, that type of voter isn't just not buying what they're selling. And also, it's not a sustainable... There's no path to a sustainable core vote with that approach. And he basically decided that Europe was going to be the central offer to the new voters they were going to target. Because he did that, and because their party is so democratic, a bunch of new people who were infused by that policy have joined. That means that the policy is basically non-negotiable for the leadership. They cannot pass a conference motion freeing themselves from it.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So why are those EU citizens in places like Westminster who want to give the government a kick in? Why are they not, let's be honest, they're not likely to vote Lib Dem in vast numbers,
well,
are they?
Partly because they understand first past the post, right? They know that Labour is the button to press to kick those people. So basically, I think what the Lib Dems would be a good night for the Lib Dems is oddly one in which they start to do better in places with high numbers of Remainers, not necessarily even just winning, but they should really be starting to place in the most high Remain borough parts of Lambeth and Hackney, for example. Again,
strong
not,
second,
yeah, strong, yeah, holding on to the seats they retain in Hackney, but placing elsewhere. In Manchester, for example, they really ought to gain all of the Withington wards as opposed to just one. Right at the moment, they have one councillor out of 94. And in some ways,
he is the official opposition on Manchester City Council, isn't he? He's literally the only non-Labour councillor.
He's the only one. In some ways, I think the Lib Dems should weirdly be willing to trade some losses for having a vote which makes slightly more sense. Because I just think if they are going to have a long-term viability, it's going to be on a party which is for a specific thing, not as a kind of hoover of non-specific grievances, because you can't have sustainable growth that way. The other interesting thing to watch about the Lib Dems is in Richmond, they are continuing their electoral pact with the Greens. Now, I like the idea of electoral pacts in theory. In practice, my suspicion is that one party always comes off worse. Because basically voters aren't blocks to be moved around as political parties would wish. So basically there are some wards where the Lib Dems are standing two councillors and the Greens are standing one. And the idea is that these three councillors will beat the three Conservatives. Now, I would like to be wrong, but my instinct is this will not happen. Then people will not split ticket in an effective way because they mostly just don't.
Well, there's also, I mean, there must be a communications problem, right? Like, even the people likely to turn up for local elections do not necessarily sort of like follow the communications beforehand. They probably won't be aware of this pact and realise this is what you're supposed to do, right?
Well, I mean, so a good example of this is in Oxford West and Oxford East in the 1987 election. There was a localised tactical voting campaign against tuition fees because the Conservative minister in Oxford West, yes, when they were talking about introducing them, was the higher education minister. And basically what happened was is a bunch of students in the studenty part of East who were organising the campaign did vote tactically and Labour won in 1987. This tactical voting just was nowhere near as effective in Oxford West, and the Lib Dems did not win that seat until 1997.
Why was it less effective without the student population, you think?
I think basically because the main way that the tactical voting worked was through high information voters. And the thing about high information voters is your ideal high information is a graduate or about to be graduate with a lot of time on their hands to follow politics.
Oh, yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, a student, right? So you'd kind of expect that to be the case. Now it may be slightly different because Green voters already have some experience of voting tactically in Richmond to stop the Conservatives and voting for the Lib Dems. My question is this maybe the election which reveals that the Greens don't actually get very much out of it at the end? Not least because a lot of people who are considering voting Tory but might vote Lib Dem because they're angry about the European Union, if they see there are only two Lib Dems, I reckon you'll probably see a lot of "I'll vote for the two Lib Dems," and then if there's a woman Tory candidate, or if there's a generic "stop Brexit" candidate, or they'll just exhaust. They won't use all three of their votes. I could be wrong, but I think Richmond is fascinating to watch for that reason.
Richmond would be a good borough to watch. We're almost out of time, but one thing I want to cover very quickly is, you know, this time last year, this podcast, which you appeared on many episodes, to talk about the Metro Mayor elections. Mm-hmm. We do have a Metro Mayor election this year. For the first time, we're going to see a mayor of the Sheffield City region. There's not really much suspense in that one, is there? We know who that's going to be. It's Dan Jarvis, right?
I mean, we should never take the voters for granted, but
we can. That said, we can.
But we can probably take the voters for granted. Yeah. He will win. There was a fun kind of intra-Labour bun fight in the leadership, which has a majority on the NEC, basically tried to get Dan Jarvis to step down in order to try and get a preferred candidate in, which, I mean, I kind of understand the rationale, apart from the fact that local Labour parties don't like it when they're obviously being told to do something. So I don't think it would have worked even if Dan Jarvis had been willing to play ball. He wasn't. He wants to remain as an MP because the Sheffield City Mayor... Am I right in saying they have no powers and no budget? Or is it they have, like, a power and, like,
it's
£5?
Incredibly weak. There's like, this hilarious ongoing row about what geography to do devolution in Yorkshire. So at one point, the Sheffield City region was going to be the four old boroughs of South Yorkshire, which is Sheffield, Rotherham, Barnsley, and what's the fourth?
Doncaster,
thank you. Plus three other boroughs taken from either Derbyshire or Nottinghamshire, which are in the kind of the Sheffield commuter zone. That didn't really work because Nottinghamshire and Derbyshire county councils suddenly realised they were going to be losing quite a lot of money. And also that was around the time the one Yorkshire campaign for, you know, any devolution has to be to Yorkshire rather than to subsections of it was kicking off. And also like various awful rural Tories up there were kind of a pain in the arse. But yes, anyway, there was a big row about the geography. At one point it was just going to be Sheffield and Rotherham. Or like only Sheffield and Rotherham were really committed to this because Doncaster and Barnsley said, "Oh, we're going to go with the one Yorkshire thing." Then the government said, "No, screw you. It's still going to, there's already legislation for this. So we're going to create this mayoralty." But nobody's really feeling very enthusiastic about it. It doesn't seem to have any powers or budget to speak of. And as I understand it, Jarvis wants to remain an MP in large part so he can campaign to expand the geography to basically be the whole of Yorkshire. I think that's the...
Yeah, basically he wants to expand both its geographic scope and its powers.
Good luck with that.
So the fascinating thing is, yeah, and obviously no discussion of Metro Mayors would be complete without a period of silence for Sue Jeffries' Teesside.
She was so great. You know, I went up and interviewed her for an episode of this. She was really amazing. I came away like adoring her even more than I did when she was just our meme.
I keep meaning to do that. Marvel Infinity War, you know, is the most ambitious crossover in history meme.
Oh, someone already did that on my meme page. Yeah, that already happened.
Yeah, well, fine. So one of the, yeah, although I don't think he's as good as Sue Jeffries would have been, Ben Houghton has been unexpectedly...
He's not bad, is he?
Yeah, he has.
Like, he is actually sort of thinking about stuff now. I mean, he did just campaign through trolling, but I think that was like a deliberate profile-raising strategy because he didn't expect to win.
But he is like kind of taking it... If it makes sense, he's kind of... In some ways, he has done the thing that some people said in 2008 Boris Johnson would do, which is like...
Grow into the role.
Yeah, basically. Run on the like, lol, I'll bring the root master back. But then he would hopefully go, no, guys, I'm not going to actually shell out millions and millions of pounds on a new Rootmaster. That would be stupid. He has actually done a lot of that. Now, the interesting question I have in terms of the direction of devolution, we know that Theresa May is not into it, but there are two Conservative mayors, three in the weird East Anglia one as well, but there are two in particular, Andy Street and Ben Houghton, who are doing quite interesting things, who may, one assumes, start to ask for more powers.
There are four Conservative mayors. You've got Tim Bowles in the west of England, as people are prone to do.
There are four Conservative mayors.
Oh, so the east of England one is really just Cambridgeshire and Peterborough.
I mean, it's not my fault that literally these metro mayor areas are just weird arbitrary things of whatever cuss.
Don't get angry with the facts, Stephen. I'm just telling you the facts.
Okay, fine. 4, 5, 8, 6, 9. The point is there are some Conservative mayors. Two of them are doing quite well. They may want more powers. This may encourage the government to be more engaged with devolution than you'd think, because my assumption is although I can easily see how Theresa May, I think, is partisan enough to just do a bill being like expands the powers of the Metro Mayors.
She would totally do that, wouldn't she?
There are, however, enough Conservatives.
Actually, the argument I think that could sway her against that is like, what if we lose next time? I think that's probably the one thing that might put her off. But anyway, sorry.
But I think that the interesting variable there as well is, I think it's the kind of thing where if a bill is introduced to increase the powers of some Metro mayors, there are enough Conservatives who genuinely care about devolution as an agenda, then it probably does end up being amended to more powers for everyone.
Also, it's worth noting that in last autumn's budget, there were goodies for all the Metro mayors, regardless of which party holds the seat at the moment. Yeah. So,
I guess I'll come back afterwards to laugh at all the things we got wrong and to be devastated that I'm trying to work out what the result that could make me most upset would be. Actually, the one thing we didn't discuss in terms of mayors is what does Watford have that nowhere else in the country does?
A Liberal Democrat mayor.
Okay, you getting that right was not very satisfying to me, but yes.
I did literally look up what other councils had mayoral elections earlier, so yeah, I'd... So there's two types of mayors, well, three if you count Lord Mayors, but Metro Mayors are kind of head of combined authorities of multiple councils, but there's also the elected head of individual councils. So like the mayor of Hackney, Philip Glanville, is also running for re-election in the next few weeks and will definitely win because it's bloody Hackney. Of course Labour is going to retain that seat. But he's just the head of the council rather than it being a sort of executive
cabinet.
He's
the head of the best council in the world, but okay.
But yeah, now looking at the list of mayoralties that are up, with the exception of Watford, I think I'm right in saying they're all quite boring ones where it's just, yeah, obviously Labour have got this. Is that fair?
Yes. So Tower Hamlets has... So Tower Hamlets first has split. Robina Khan is running again as maybe, I want to say, Tower Hamlets Now or Tower Hamlets for Britain or...
Tower Hamlets Second, is that...?
Yeah, but... So, you know, Tower Hamlets could spring a surprise, but Watford is the most interesting one because the Lib Dems are very strong locally in Watford. They are not so much anymore in a general election, and their very popular incumbent, Dorothy Thornhill, is stepping down. As you will know, and our Lib Dem listeners will know from bitter experience, that party tends to do badly when an incumbent steps down because they are more reliant on the vote of the incumbent than they are of the party brand, which is not the case for the other parties. You would still think that the Lib Dems could hold on there, but you know, if you were Labour, you'd fancy your chances there too. So I think that's the fun one.
Watford at Westminster, I think I'm right in saying, was at one point the only genuine three-way marginal in the country, wasn't it?
Yes, but sadly, three ways in Westminster, as in everywhere else, have fallen out of fashion, and so it's now really only a two-way.
Okay, well, if you do happen to find Professor John Curtis in your kitchen going through your cupboards, then please contact the relevant authorities.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.